Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, my name is Brenda Lainoff, and I'm the creator of the Brenda's Mindful Healing Show, and my company is called Whispering Energetic Healing. I am an intuitive counselor, energy healer, and speaker. So I really work with many individuals with some challenging and not so health or challenging health issues around the world on Skype and phone. So if you have access to a computer or phone, you really do have access to heal. And for further information as to the healing work, and I provide a complimentary energy scan that's kind of fun, and you can just check it to see what's going on within your energy field. You can go to my website of whisperingenergetic.ca. The reason and the intent of this radio show is to really explore options for, you know, the audience, you know, as to their self-healing and self-empowerment. The guests that I bring on are on cutting-edge healthcare practices that really integrate Western and alternative medicine practices. So this week on the healing show, I'm very happy to be able to bring on a lady named Doreen Leckler. And now, Doreen, I heard her being interviewed by Dr. Judy in the United States and was really drawn to her energy. So I approached Doreen, and she graciously accepted being on the show. So I just want to mention Doreen and to her and to her bio. She's a best-selling author, a goal achievement expert, and incurable cancer conqueror. You know, with a passion and a purpose to unleash the God-given excellence in others, Doreen teaches steps to create constructive, successful, high-performing outcomes. Whether she's been working with leaders of a nation, community, organization, or individuals battling chronic disease. Now, Doreen's a two-time cancer conqueror, which is amazing, and Doreen has speaks extensively on her journey and the spirit-mind-body strategy that fostered her own healing of, quote, incurable stage 4 cancer with metastases to the bone. Doreen is the founder of DestinyMakers.org and the author of two books. The Spirit to Heal is Doreen's personal cancer story, about the power of faith for healing, and her new bestseller, The Mind to Heal, emphasizes our role and responsibility to receive healing. It outlines 7 life-giving steps for how to think in the midst of disease. So welcome, Doreen.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
I'm really pleased that you came on, and with disease being at an epidemic right now, I'm really excited that you have agreed to come on and discuss, you know, as to the different steps that you've gone through and how that and as to the healing. So this will be really beneficial for people that are going to be tuning in today and at a later time. Doreen, can I ask you, how did you? You know, I know you've got an extensive background, but what was it, and we'll go directly into that, that when you first discovered you had cancer, was there anything within that time frame that you can think of that may have triggered anything as to the cancer?
Boy, that's a great question. I do know that my particular diagnosis was not genetically based. And so, you know, I find with a lot of people that I meet and talk with or coach around disease and cancer, that it's really kind of a Molotov cocktail. There's so many factors, spiritual factors, biological factors, cognitive factors that go into sort of the nurturing of disease, if you will. But I do think that, to answer your question specifically, yes, I think for about a year before, prior to the diagnosis, and I've always been a very healthy person. I was very fit. I eat well. I eat, you know, I'm athletic. I like working out. So it was a huge surprise to me. Some people see themselves as sick people. They're constantly feeling yucky, you know, and they affirm it and they talk about it. But if you were to ask me, and if you were to ask me still, I would say, no, I'm a healthy person. I had only ever once been in a hospital, and that was to deliver my son when I was 40 years old. So physically, I was fine. I thought I was fine. I saw myself as healthy. I think emotionally, I was dealing with a lot of stress. Personally and professionally, and I was doing an awful lot of traveling at the time, the year prior to my diagnosis. I was gone quite a bit, and my son was young. I was really fortunate that my husband was at home, not work. He worked from home. We had relocated to Pennsylvania, and so his company allowed him to office from home because there wasn't an office here locally. So that did help quite a bit with the traveling, knowing that there was always a parent in the house. But nonetheless, you know, I felt the stress and somewhat the guilt of leaving at the time my five-year-old son who, you know, hadn't even gotten into kindergarten yet. So I think there was a lot of emotional stress and distress in my life at about a year prior to my diagnosis.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Because they do say my experience with working with people with you know, chronic disease and especially cancer, that there usually is something that does some trauma that can sit it, you know, prior. A lot of people can pinpoint. They say, well, okay, this happened or that happened. And, you know, within my family, you know, we can pinpoint, okay, it was the death of our mother that triggered all three her daughters to, you know, something happened, some physical
right.
breakdown. So it is interesting. It's something that I think people need to keep note of. Is like, okay, what was going on prior that they kind of maybe discounted? So, yeah, thank you. That's something that really needs to be mentioned.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting, Brenda. I've studied over the years, over the many years, the area of work that I'm in and the work that I've done in and around disease or dis-ease, emotional and spiritual dis-ease or physical disease. I've looked at this theologically. My graduate degree is from seminary, so I've looked at it theologically in terms of who God is and who He made us to be. I've studied this psychologically with a degree in counseling and the work that I've done for you know the last 14 years in corporations on teaching them the cognitive ways in which we think and how it impacts our behavior. So I've studied it and taught it psychologically. I've looked at it and studied it and taught it sociologically in terms of the culture of whether it's a family or a community or an organization and how that impacts performance. And I've studied it and I've looked at it biologically in terms of the brain's function on the body and most significantly in the area of psychoneuroimmunology, which is a field of study that looks at our psychology, how we think, how it impacts our nervous system, and how that impacts our immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And so, interestingly, although these are very different fields of study, theology, psychology, sociology, biology, really they're not. They're really one and the same. It's really different words and terminology and language for really the same types of concepts and principles about who we are, how we think, and how it impacts our performance. Not only our quantifiable outcomes in life that we can see and measure, but also inwardly our immune system and how we develop our intelligence, how we enhance our memory, how we keep ourselves healthy, or the lack thereof.
Yes. It's amazing, isn't it, what we can store within our immune system?
Mm-hmm.
The emotions that can trigger the downfall of our immune system.
Right.
Yeah, I find that very interesting work, and I'm constantly amazed every day, and how our thoughts really can form the way that our body functions, good and bad. So there's so much to the emotions that has been kind of put on the shelf, I think, in regards to cancer, and hasn't really been looked at as deeply as I think that it, you know, and respected as much as it should be. When you talk about this whole, wow, this personal development and all that, you know, that can really create disease or unease of the body. What have you found with, for example, people that are survivors of really horrific events? Can that also be passed down, like through inherited, perhaps?
You know, that's an interesting comment that you make, and there's the jury's out on that from a study perspective. But there is work that's being done, and in fact, I've done some reading on this with survivors of the Holocaust. Naturally, the next generation, their children, would have the more environmental effects of parents from the Holocaust, as we would imagine, as we would rightly imagine. But now into the second and third generations, they're doing work to see if there is a more of an inherited or a genetic predisposition within the cells because of those experiences. And of course, as I mentioned, the jury's still out on that, and you'll find critics on the other side that will say, no, our cells don't have memory like that can be passed on genetically. But it's a very interesting concept, and it's an interesting concept because if you come from a biblical perspective, in the Old Testament, it talks about the generation, the sins of the fathers from moving from one generation to the other generation, meaning that there is this genetic predisposition, perhaps within the cells, that cause people to retain that kind of memory.
Yes, and I believe that so much. And it's interesting because you can, I found that working with people, when you're muscle testing, you can test that information. The subconscious is that computer, and you can test it all. So that's, like you say, the jury's still out on that, but I tend to believe personally that we do retain that information, and it can be tested.
Yeah. What I love about that, Brenda, is that, if we were to had this conversation even 5 years ago, this kind of conversation would have been considered just kind of wacky and way out there. But in fact, now science is really kind of coming to the point where they're looking at things like this, like areas of psychoneuroimmunology, and the fact that our belief, there is a biology to our belief. And these things aren't as crazy anymore, and to the extent that they're willing to open up the possibility and people begin to look at this and study it, they're beginning to see that there's more and more and more validity to these ideas.
Yes, and that is exciting. And like you say, it's only been within the last number of years.
Mm-hmm.
What have you found in regards to the physiology? I see a quote, you the 80% of disease is rooted in stress.
Mm-hmm.
That
yes.
seems awfully high, doesn't it?
It absolutely. It really is. In fact, I was stunned myself when I came across that number, and just the impact of stress in our country, but also in our bodies. When you think about it, that whole idea of fight, flight, or freeze. I come from a God perspective. And so, I can't even begin to even think scientifically how something like that would just evolve in us. So for me, I come from a God perspective, and I believe that we were created with that ability in our brain to recognize fear, recognize danger, recognize a challenge, and to respond. And the brain has a chemical response in the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus releases chemicals into the body that are congruent with our emotion state. And we have an area in the brain, it's called the reticular activating system. And it has a lot of functions, but one of those functions is to let in information that is significant to us. So what's significant? Well, there's two areas that are significant. Significance in terms of it is information that aligns with what we already believe to be true about our world. That's significant to us. But the other thing that is significant to us is threat. So it lets in it lets in information of threat or danger. And when it does, that information gets relayed to the hypothalamus. And the hypothalamus has the job, it's the pumping station of our endocrine system. And it releases cortisol and adrenaline into the body to get the muscles to prepare to fight, flight, or freeze. And, of course, as you can imagine, that was awfully important back in the sort of caveman days when we needed that kind of response. But we don't live, you know, particularly in the Western Hemisphere, we don't live in that kind of danger day to day. But we do in our minds, we create a lot of anxiety and stress, fear, worry, anger, frustration, all of these emotions, what I call fear-based emotions, trigger the hypothalamus to secrete cortisol and adrenaline into the body. Now, if your body needs it, it was designed to use it momentarily, but not chronically, not day in and day out. And so if you're a constant worrier or a constant warrior, fighter, warrior, or versus a worrier, you know, then your body doesn't know what to do with all of this stuff, and it begins to attach itself to the cells, and it changes the structure of the cells, and it makes your cells more permeable to infections and virus and tumors. Yeah. And so it's crucial that we watch the way we think. There's a verse in the New Testament that's a kind of a mantra for me, but it's in the book of Philippians. It was written to the Philippian church, and it says, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think on those things. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, God didn't have to tell us all about the hypothalamus, but because we do have a hypothalamus, and if you're not thinking about the things that are good and positive and true and noble, then you're thinking the opposite, and you're filling your body with toxic chemicals that the body cannot process over and over and over again.
And it does affect our soul, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you get these toxic thoughts, it really damages our soul. How have you found that by, what have you done personally so that when a negative thought comes in, how are you able to go, okay, I recognize that I'm feeling this way, I'm reacting this way, then to let it go?
Right. That's a great question. Well, let me do a little backstory first to make, to provide a context. Part of the reason why I feel so fortunate and so blessed about the two diagnoses that I had is that for years I was working in the public sector, working with organizations of all sizes, all kinds, from manufacturing to healthcare to education to government agencies to you name it, about teaching them the psychology of success, the psychology of change, how to manage change, the psychology of performance. So I would go into organizations who wanted to upgrade the level of their performance of their people, and I would teach them how the mind works and how, giving them a very sequential process for how to renew their thinking. You know, a lot of times what happens is we want our people to perform better in our organization, so we bring in people that come in and give us a whole list of things to do. Well, it's oftentimes not that we don't know what to do. It's getting ourselves to do what we know we should do. For instance, there's so much information out in the world today about health and nutrition, but most of us still don't do it, right? So how do you get yourself to do what you know you should do? Well, so I was already deeply immersed in these cognitive principles around the mind and thinking. And so I was very consciously aware of the subconscious thinking processes. I mean, most of our days, we get up and we live through subconscious programmed responses. You don't think when you get out of bed about lifting your leg, pulling it over to the side of the bed. You know, we just do so much by habit, by rote. So getting people to become consciously aware of their subconscious thinking patterns is really one of the first steps to any growth and development. You know, we need to take time to reflect and think about what we think about, because we know from science and we know from research that at the end of the day, it's the way that we think that impacts the results that we're getting in any area of our life. So with that kind of background, I mean, that's what I did for a living, that's what I do for a living. When it happened to me, I knew that I had to be very, very careful about my thinking, and fortunately, I knew the tools to apply.
Yes.
Because what I have found, you know, it's interesting, and you know, my first diagnosis of breast cancer was in 2006, and I was very fortunate. It was early stage one. I had a lumpectomy and 33 days of radiation, and that was about it. We did oncotype testing on the tumor itself and the DNA, and it showed it to be on the low end of moderately aggressive. And that's why a year and a half later, when I was still just going for my biannual mammograms, and they found a hot spot up in the upper armpit, and we did a series of tests after test after test after test, and found out that all of a sudden now I'm diagnosed with stage four, and it's incurable, and it's already metastasized, and it's growing on my spine. It was like, what? Where did that come from? I didn't have an aggressive cancer in the first place. It was just mind-boggling. But since that time, since 2009 in particular, I've talked with so many people. I've been invited to so many groups to speak and cancer support groups. And what I find is even people who have a religious faith, you know, a God faith that I share, is that people will hope and pray one thing. They'll hope and pray for healing, but
yes,
they talk about and dwell on the problem.
Yes.
And it doesn't work. It doesn't
That's
work
true.
In goal setting, and it doesn't work in healing. You cannot have a foot on both sides of the fence.
Right. I totally agree with you. And you have to be so totally submerged and surrender and constantly asking and praying and communicating with higher source God.
Yes.
And
but you can't do that if you're also holding on to fear.
No. Fear is one of the lowest vibrations that we can have in our body.
Yes.
When you talk about, well, all the different emotions that you can harbor in your body, do you find that that can be even more damaged than physical abuse? Like all of these emotions, like all verbal abuse, can that be more damaging at times, do you find, than the physical abuse that people receive?
Well, here's the interesting thing about research in the mind. Do you know, the mind doesn't know the difference between something it's actually experiencing versus something that you tell it. See, the mind is amoral. The spirit, we're body, mind, and spirit. Some people say, well, I'm not spiritual. Well, we all are.
Mm-hmm.
We may not acknowledge it, but some people don't acknowledge their bodies, right? And you can tell because you can see they don't take care of their bodies, right? The same thing with their spirit. We're all spiritual. Spirit, the spirit is where purpose and motivation is birthed, if you will. The mind is amoral. It's just like a computer. It accepts what you give it, whether it's actually true or not. You know, that's why the saying perception is reality. Well, it's because the mind isn't it. If I say, Doreen, you're stupid, there you go again. I can't believe you did another stupid thing. The mind doesn't argue with me and go, oh, no, Doreen, you're not really stupid. You actually graduated summa cum laude. You know, it doesn't do that. It just accepts what you give it. Now, the reason I bring this up is that it's sometimes you don't have to continue to be physically abused to suffer greatly. It's just the remembrance, the reiteration, going back again and again, rethinking that awful trauma over and over again that builds the belief and creates the trauma over and over and over again. And so to answer your question, you know, do I find that emotional belief is sometimes harder than physical trauma. Yes, it can be, because what we do with that and how we replay that over and over and over and over in our mind can cause us to get stuck in that emotional and physical trauma, and not only get stuck, but studies have shown to go into really deep downward spirals. Harvard did a study some time ago on sort of the negative self-talk cycle. That when I use the term self-talk doesn't have to just be verbally what we say, but it's that dialogue, that conversation that's going on in our minds.
Yes.
And so as we continue to play that over and over and over again, it's not just a cycle. It's really almost like a downward spiral. And you can hear that, and I'm sure you've encountered this with some of the people that you work with, that, if you don't catch people and quickly reverse that and get them out of that downward negative cycle, they can get into a sense of worthlessness, but even more than that, hopelessness. And when people lose hope, then you can literally just give up your spirit and die.
You know, I really like the information that you're providing, and it is about prayer. You know, when I used to attend my particular church many years ago, we prayed, but I always saw a little bit of disconnection, and it's because I didn't feel worthy of talking, to God as a companion. And what I like what you're saying and that you're advocating is to, talk to God as though He's there all the time, and giving your thanks for everything in your life, and it's the gratitude. And it's so huge. And I know that we hear this a lot these days, okay, gratitude and forgiveness, but it is true.
Oh, my goodness, it is. In fact, in my book, The Mind to Heal, the chapters are outlined in 7 steps to healing. And the first one is to choose life. Now, you might think that sounds kind of a little ridiculous. I mean, of course, doesn't everyone choose life? But as I mentioned earlier, most people don't. They hope and pray one thing, but they talk about and dwell on the other. I'll hear it in people's language when I speak with them, and they'll say, "I have cancer." And I'll say, "No," or they'll talk about my cancer. And I'll stop them in their tracks. You know, choosing life isn't just hoping. It's the difference between hope and faith is hope might be the goal, but faith is positive expectancy in the outcome that you desire. Hope is kind of like this cross your fingers wishful thinking, oh, I hope I get healed, please God. Faith is being sure of what you hope for. It's a positive expectancy. It's not I hope I will be healed or I hope God will heal me. It's I am healed.
Yes.
It's seeing it and professing it and visualizing it before you have any physical evidence of the kind.
Yes.
And it's bringing your body, your mind, and your spirit in total alignment with life.
Yes.
And, it's interesting. I do have to tell you this, this was not always my perspective. I had a very significant spiritual experience when I was 24 years old. I was, kind of a total party girl. I was an international model. I had been modeling for 7 years in Paris and Germany and Tokyo and New York. And when I was 24, I had a very, I did a 180 with my life. And that set my life on a course of really growing in this relationship and hunger and knowledge of God. But even though, now fast forward 25 years later, and I'm diagnosed with this disease, and I'm told by 3 major cancer institutions in the United States that I would have about a year before the metastases would be, spread to the other organs of my body. I wasn't in churches that talked about this kind of stuff. In fact, they never talked about healing. It wasn't like I was in, a real charismatic kind of religion. And so at that time, 2009, I was 48. My son was 8 years old, and I just assumed that this was going to be the way, I was going to go. And I remember sitting at my kitchen table because of the work that I do and being a goal setting expert, I realized you have to have a target. If you aim at nothing, you hit nothing every time. So I was sitting at my kitchen table and it was quiet. It was my time of prayer. And I just in prayer talking to God, I said, look, God, I gave you my life when I was 24 years old. I trust you. I'm yours. I'm bought and paid for. I'm good either way. If this is my destiny to die, I will do it with grace and dignity, and I want it to be a testimony to the people that I know in my life. And I want to prepare for my funeral service, and I want to make videos for my son when he'll hit age 13 and 21 and marriage and first child, you know, all those milestones. Mm-hmm. I said, or if I'm supposed to live, then I want to fight. But I can't be planning my funeral and fighting at the same time. Again, it's you can't sit on the fence of your future, and you cannot have a foot on either side. You have to have a target. And so my prayer was, God, I'm good either way. Tell me, how should I be thinking? How should I be thinking? Because I don't want to miss the important moments. And I had a very profound experience. This doesn't happen to me very often. I wish it did, quite frankly. It was so profound. It really sent chills in my body. And I had this, wasn't an audible voice, but it was so significantly not mine, and I don't even know how to put words around it. But this is what I heard in my spirit, I guess is the way you would say it. And I heard, Doreen, I am not the God of cancer. I am the God of life. I always seek to save. And I realized that if God was the God of life, I could choose life, and that I didn't have to plan my funeral. I was going to battle. This wasn't something God was giving me to take me out. Okay, Doreen's time is done. That's not his nature and God's character. So I knew I was fighting an enemy inside of me that didn't have the right to be there. And it changed my mindset and my perspective just like that, 180 degrees. And wow. I never wavered from that moment. And it was very interesting because a little bit later on in that week, I was going through the Bible, and there's a verse in the Old Testament that God gave to the people of Israel. And it said, I've set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life. Choose life. But it's got to be conscious. You have to take every thought captive. Mm-hmm. And the hardest times I had were when I would walk out of the doctor's office from my appointments.
Yes. I believe you. Yeah. Wow. So how are you able to maintain that focus after this experience? And to be the conviction, how are you able to maintain that conviction to carry you through and to health?
Right. Well, you know, there's a cognitive principle in psychology. We move toward what we think about. We move toward what we behold, we become. And so what I do and what I've done is the minute I really got that word that I had the opportunity to, I was not a victim of my circumstances. I could choose life. At that point, I began to look at my body, mind, and spirit. And this is really important because I know people who are they can quote Bible verses all day long, but you look at their bodies and they don't know how to take care of them. Yeah. They're eating all the wrong things. Or they're thinking, I mean, it's a cognitive knowing. But it's not in their heart. And so they're worry, yes. worry. So it has to be body, mind, and spirit. You've got to take care of everything in your body. Eliminate the sugar and the alcohol and the processed foods and the bleached flours. You know, eating whole foods. Get on a low glycemic diet. Check your pH. they say that cancer thrives in acidic environments. And one of the first things I did is I ran out to the health food store and I got pH strips. And I would spit on them and do saliva versus urine because urine is more acidic anyway. And my golly, do you know my strips didn't even change colors? That's how acidic my body was. And as I said, I wasn't a meat eater. I don't drink sodas. I usually ate salads anyway. So I don't know what that was all about other than, but it's interesting. Most people that I talk to when I find out that they've been diagnosed, I'll say, hey, go to the store and get these. And wouldn't you know, to a T, people who are diagnosed with cancer, I find, have very acidic pH. And so that's got to get in balance. I went and I got blood work done through a naturopath, and we found all kinds of toxic heavy metals in my body. Now, I've always been a white-collar professional, but the stuff I had in my body, you would have thought I was licking the floor of an industrial plant. I mean, like, I don't know where these things came from. But my naturopath gave me things to take to lyse the heavy metals out of my body. You know, I got myself on high levels of vitamin D and green tea extract and cruciferous vegetables and curcumin and melatonin and all kinds of great things that were going to build my immune system, and where there's been research that these types of supplements really help fight off tumors and advance cancers. Those were the things: exercise, making sure that even if I felt crummy or tired, I'd at least walk. I wanted blood rushing, oxygen in my blood every day. So that's what I would do with my body. Then with my mind, watching my self-talk, I would tell, if there's one thing I can implore for those who are listening, please watch the way you speak about your circumstances. Don't use possessive words like I have or my diabetes, my heart disease, don't use those words. Why? Because the mind thinks in pictures. And when you keep talking about like you would with my children or my car or my house, you don't want to possess these things. They don't deserve to be in your body. And so don't speak possessively of them, because it creates a fixed picture in your mindset.
Yes.
And you don't want to do that. And so one very practical step would be to start a blog, or there's already some very great sites out there like Caring Bridges, or find one person who you can tell your story to, because people lovingly want to know the updates, but you can't keep telling your story over and over and over again. Why? Because we move toward what we think about. So your words and thoughts will either ensnare you in your current reality, or they'll move you toward the picture of health and healing. It all depends on what you're talking about. So I started a blog. I said to my friends and family, I can't keep answering all of your questions about how I'm feeling and what are the doctors saying. I'm going to write it out one time, and if you want to see what's going on, here it is. But I said, I need to talk about my future. I need to say I am healed. I need to talk about what I'm going to be doing 5 years from now and 10 years from now. And so I had to build a support group of friends around me who would be praying for me and that would be helping me. You know, my mother, I love my mother. She's one of my best friends. But every time she'd come to my door, she'd be in tears.
Yeah.
And I understand. I mean, and she had, my younger brother had been killed in a car accident, and I understand that. But I said, Mom, you can't be around me and look like I'm dying. You have to talk about my future, or I can't spend time with you, you know.
Yes.
So that's really important, is to find a support group of people around you who will speak into your future and not keep talking about your current reality. It's not that you deny it. It's just you don't give it the weightiness that it needs, because you have to keep your vision, your focus, your energy on your goal of healing.
I really like your idea of blogging, your recommendation to blog, and so you're not harboring those emotions in your body. So I think that's just excellent. And finding a support group. And I know they're out there. I know that when I spoke to and interviewed Bill Henderson, he mentioned, like, they are there. You just have to get out there, search it, and Google whatever it is, check with your church, school, but find the support groups because they're there.
Yeah.
And where you can resonate with those with the people that are really rooting for your health. So no, I think that's an excellent recommendation, is to get that support group.
One thing I want to say about that is I've been asked, as a result of my books and my profession, to come and speak at support groups, and as I'm there in the midst of them and they're carrying on their natural, you know, business routine at the beginning and before they announce me as a speaker, oftentimes people will go around the room and they'll start giving their updates and giving their updates, and again, I would encourage you to find a group that focuses on healing, that talks about healing, and not a group that sits around and everyone takes turns giving their latest diagnosis.
Isn't that true?
That can just make you feel more miserable
crazy
when you leave.
Well, I remember, 25, I can't remember, years ago, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. So I thought, and this was something, a word that wasn't really common. So I thought, well, I'll go to a fibromyalgia support group. And that lasted one evening because everyone was complaining about their physical issues. And I thought, well, what kind of a support is that? So
yeah.
Very negative. Absolutely. We need to be around really supportive people that do not give off those negative vibes. And if they're in our lives, then they need to be out of our lives. Send them love, but, you know, you just can't be around that negativity.
That's right. And that's why, Brenda, what you do is so significant, and why you are such a gift to the people, not only through this radio program, but the people who, you know, seek you out, because you can be that particular. So sometimes people don't really have a support group, and and so the work that you do with them is so vital. That's just so vital.
It is, and it's just not me, but it is vital for anyone who's out there who really wants to help, and where our help is really needed, and it's needed in so many different ways. But I think for yourself, again, Doreen, for the fact that you have survived this twice is amazing. From the point of time when you're diagnosed with, you know, this incurable, quote, fourth degree cancer, how long did it take for you to work your way out of that, you know, unease in the breast area? How long did it take? What kind of time period was it that for you personally?
Yeah, amazingly, it was about 7 months. I mean, that's,
wow.
So it was first discovered in February, the beginning of February, and so the next 2 months, February and March, and the first part of April, were a biopsy and MRI and lumbar MRI and PET CT scan and a bone biopsy. And then visiting this, getting a second opinion and a third opinion, and so we had surgery May 1st to remove 19 lymph nodes under my right arm. And all three cancer institutions determined that because I was not symptomatic, I wasn't in great pain. I had a little achiness in my back, but I wasn't really in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And they all agreed that Stage 4 means that it's already left the host area. It's in the bloodstream, and it will pop up anywhere at any time.
Okay.
And it's not curable. And so because I was not symptomatic, they said, we don't want to come out with the big guns, which in their terminology they meant chemo, but we don't want to come out with the big guns yet, because Stage 4 is like a marathon. And so they didn't want to put a lot of chemo into me at that point, nor did they want to radiate, because I said, well, why don't you just radiate the lesions off the spine? And they said, well, we don't want to do that because, you know, once you radiate an area, you can't re-radiate. So let's take the lymph nodes out, and we'll have you come back. This was May 1st. They said, we'll have you come back at the end of the summer. We'll scan and see how far the cancer spreading, where it's spreading next, and then we'll have a better idea as to what kinds of clinical trials might be available for you. So I had all of May and the summer to really, what I began to do is I began going through the Bible and pulling out, gleaning out the promises of God. Now, again, I wasn't going to church that taught me that. I never thought about healing before. Everyone in my family and friends, they died violently, suddenly, tragically. So this was very new for me. And it was almost like every morning I would open up and there was this another like promise that would pop out. And I'm thinking, gosh, I've been a student of the Bible for 25 years. I've never seen this before. And I would take out the promise and I would write it down on a 3x5 card. And I would write it in a format that I teach in organizations as to how to effectively write affirmations or goal statements so that the creative subconscious catches it. Okay. Because you can write goal statements and not do them in a way that's effective for renew the mind. So I would write them out in the first person present tense, you know, by Christ's stripes, I am healed, or I have been given everything I need for life and godliness, or the same spirit that raised Christ from the dead lives in me, so cancer cannot. My body is. So I'd write them as though they're accomplished, not as
yes.
the first person present tense. And just like I do with any kind of goal statements or affirmations that I work with people. So I would write them down, and then I would read them. I'd read it out loud. I'd close my eyes, and I would visualize. There's a verse in the Bible that Jesus talks about that those who accept him have his spirit, and the spirit is rivers of living water that would flow. So I would visualize rivers of living water mm-hmm. from the top of my head, washing every cell in my body. Mm-hmm. And essentially I would just say, my body's a tabernacle of the Holy Spirit. There's no way you can stay. You must go. Sorry,
yeah.
got to go.
Yeah.
And that's how I would speak to it. I wasn't afraid of it. I didn't make it bigger than me. It wasn't wishful thinking. I truly, truly believe in the Word of God. So I just spoke it and believed it would manifest after its kind, because that's what our words do. Our words have creative power.
Yes.
To manifest what we speak. And so I spoke it, not because I said it, but because it was God's word. And so, you know, I mean, I'm just Doreen, but I'm not the creator of the universe. But when I speak the creator of the universe's words over this inconvenience in my body, which is how I saw it, it had to go. There's just no other option. There's just no option. See, one of the things too, Brent, I want to just say quickly is sometimes people can make this cancer. I've been talking with a young woman who's just been diagnosed with breast cancer, and she's in her early 30s. And, you know, I've been trying to help her choose the right perspective, because oftentimes we can make this tiny little tumor. You know, 99% of our body can be healthy, and there's this small little cancerous tumor, but we think it's so much bigger than it
yes.
is. And we fear it like it's some big giant. And I just speak to it like, you know what, you got to get out of here. I'm bought and paid for. My body's a temple of the Holy Spirit. You can't live. You can't coexist. And I would speak to it that way. Like it's just, I'm squishing it under my heel. I just squish it under my heel.
I love
that
it.
Small.
And I love the saying, my body is the temple of Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful, true affirmation.
Yes.
So, yes, I am healed. My body, temple, is that Holy Spirit. I think also that we have to be, well, we can't give our power away to anyone or any circumstance and allow that power to just to digest into our body. How do you go about the day, you know, from day to day, for example, what is happening in the world? And and not allow that to seep into your body, into your mind. Mm. Is there any tips that you have? Maybe it is turning off the news, but at some point in time, I find that I do have to know what's going on in the world. I mean, I want
right.
to know, but at the
right.
same time, I don't want that energy to be absorbed. What do
right.
you do to just keep that out of your body?
I love that question. And I love that because it's a good word for me personally. We all have different temperaments, and some people are just naturally more lighthearted. I tend to be kind of a deep thinker. I always have been. And so I'm more serious, and I feel the weightiness of the world.
Yes.
And so what you just said is I'm just going to take that for myself for today. But because you're absolutely right, we can unconsciously take in so much negative energy, even if it's not our own. You know, some of us who are just deep thinkers and deep feelers, we can feel the pain of other people. And I've wondered about that because I have a lot of people, as a result of my two books, The Spirit to Heal and The Mind to Heal, I've had people contact me all over the world who want to just talk, you know, and say, would you talk to me? And of course I'll talk to you. You know, it's a ministry I feel that I have with people who have been diagnosed. But I've had other friends say to me, how can you do that and not feel so weighted down? Well, one of the things that I do is I have a discipline, I guess, if you will, of starting each morning with prayer and meditation. And I wasn't naturally the kind of person who always saw the glass half full. I had a lot of things happen in my upbringing that caused me to have a very negative worldview, have a worldview that was based on scarcity or waiting for the next shoe to drop. So I've had to work very, very hard to be intentional. And I shouldn't put that in the past tense. I still have to work very hard every day to be intentional and to be celebratory and to have an attitude of gratitude. Part of it is my temperament. Part of it is my upbringing. So that's, you know, first nature, second nature, genetics and environment. But whatever it is, the person that's Doreen has to be really intentional. And some of us are like that. And so I would encourage you to create for yourself a discipline, whatever it is. Some people like to go out and walk in nature, you know, and be outside. Some people find it, you know, while they're through running or exercise, they find just a way to be able to release. For me, it's prayer and meditation, also being outside. Some people like gardening and touching nature. But to find a way and to do it regularly,
okay,
where we can focus.
Yes. Excellent. And I think that is absolutely key. But as you say, it has to be on a regular, ongoing basis, just not once in a while, and making it a habit. Like, we can make so many things just a habit, good and bad. Doreen, there's just so much else I could talk to you about, and I'd love to get information from you, but we're going to have to just close up the show. But how can people get in touch with you? Can you give out some information and what you're doing? And I know that you do you're a speaker, and if you have anything that's coming up in the future?
Right now, coming up in the future, I have some things that are youth events. If you're a teenager, where I'm teaching them how to live in a world of creating a future that's optimistic, that's, you know, a can-do kind of attitude. I wish I had had that type of information when I was a teenager. So I'm really looking forward. The next 2 months, we're doing some things in the Washington, D.C. area with youth. I have The Spirit to Heal and The Mind to Heal are two books that I've written. The Spirit to Heal has a lot of the scripture verses that I found that I meditated on that became part of my reality. And also, you can reach me at destinymakers.org, and you'll see there my calendar of events and speaking engagements and things of that nature.
Excellent. And I really like the fact that you have all of these prayers, meditations in your book. For someone out there who is dealing with a serious illness, maybe it's not cancer, but something else, this is great information. And to really meditate on it and prayer on it is excellent. So thank you so much, Doreen. I really appreciate you coming on, and you're just getting so much inspiration that's really, really needed right now. And I really honor you for doing that and for being a gift to the world. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Brenda. Thanks.
So we'll be talking again probably at some point in time. And thank you all that have been listening. And we'll be having this recording. It will be posted on the talkshoe.com. And you can go to Brenda's Mindful Healing Show. And it will be loaded up here within a short period of time. So, yeah, thanks, everyone. And we'll be talking to you shortly. So, bye, Doreen.
Bye, Brenda. Take care.
You too. Thank you.